Hello!
Let me give you a little motto I live my life by.
Bang, bang, bang the drum.
What? That's not a motto. That's just you saying a bunch of things.
It's difficult to name one favorite drummer.
Roy! Haynes!
Wow. You're amazing, dude.
Thanks. I like to play.
Drummers Weekly Groovecast.
Drummers Weekly Groovecast. Drummers Weekly Groovecast. Drummers Weekly Groovecast.
We are back with season 4's rendition of the artist feature.
Woo!
This has suddenly turned out to be one of the listeners' favorites, man. They love this thing.
I could dig that. You know, you're going to dig a little deeper into someone's background and discography, and we kind of pick some off the beaten path guys on occasion, and that I'm sure that is attractive.
I think it is. I think it is exactly what you said. And we got a nice little bit of heat from that Sonny Payne one that we did, thanks to John, which, by the way, today's show is also thanks to John.
Oh, yeah.
But on DFO in particular, mm-hmm. there was some really nice chatter about the Sonny Payne episode. So a little shout out to DFO as well.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, man. He's a... I swear, just about anyone I mentioned Sonny to, they're like, oh, yeah, I love that guy. So, you know, it's not on the tip of your tongue, but when reminded, a lot of people realize how incredible he was.
Well, it's like we talked about when we were setting up that show, that when you think in terms of the big band drummers, the ones that everybody comes with up front, it's like, oh, well, you got Buddy and you got Louie and blah, blah, blah. And you go down that list of people, you know, and then a lot of times you'll even have like the Mel Lewis's come in there. Mm-hmm. And then somebody says something about Sonny Payne. And it's like, oh, Sonny, the master.
King,
he is, man. You know,
I think when you put it all together with chops and vibe and power and everything you love in a big band drummer, he's almost kind of like the perfect.
That vibe thing is what gets me, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I think it's exactly what you said. It's that combination, because you never know when he's going to be playing super subtle at a pianissimo level, then all of a sudden he's going to rip your head off with a machine gun blast, drum fill of shoes in the dryer, falling down the stairs, and then perfectly come out on count one.
Yeah.
You know? And then also I wanted to mention something else about our past artist features. Something that never ceases to amaze me is the Jim Gordon show that we did. How long ago was that, John?
A year and a half, maybe?
Yeah. That Jim Gordon show was long enough ago to where it was one of the shows that I put out on YouTube as well. And, you know, I stopped doing that because I was looking at our YouTube numbers, and when you have a show that gets 84 listens, it's kind of like, okay, well, that's enough of that. I mean, you know, how many people are going to have enough patience to sit and, first off, listen to a podcast? Secondly, listen to it on YouTube where there's no video. There's like our logo sitting on the screen for an hour and a half. But that being said, that damn Jim Gordon episode, I get a notification through email about once every couple weeks from somebody who's left a comment, and I'll go and look at it, and that thing's like got nearly 2,000 listens to it so far.
On YouTube?
On YouTube alone.
That's hilarious.
And there's a ton of listens to it on our regular SoundCloud platform as well. Right. So there's something about that guy that has really rung a chord with people. I mean, he's obviously another one of these guys that you know him, but you don't know him.
Right.
You know, and the majority of the comments are one of two things. It's like, hey, what about this track too? It's also fantastic. Like the one, everybody wants to say like Bell Bottom Blues, you know, because it's one of those off the beaten path, turned around backwards grooves. Right. And then the other one is inevitably, man, thanks for shining a light on Jim Gordon. He's a guy that not many people really talk about, but he was so incredibly influential. And then if people do actually talk about him, they talk about his the murder that he had, you know, back in the early 80s and him being in prison right now.
Right.
So anyway, that's I thought it was an interesting little side note also is that the Jim Gordon episode, which if you haven't heard it, go back and check it out. It's obviously something that people really like. And then before we get into the show, there's another thing I want to talk about just briefly. We like to talk about our emails and social media messages that we got. And sometimes we talk about the janky ones we get, the crazy ones, or the ones that, you know, where somebody like asks a question and, you know, we try to answer it and whatnot.
Man, some idiot gets a track wrong that Jim Gordon didn't play on.
I didn't even mention that.
Well, you don't have to.
But I got an Instagram message last week that I just want to read it off. And again, I'm not going to give the guy's full name, but I mean, he probably wouldn't mind because it's just a very, very nice, very thoughtful little message this guy sent. But I got a message on our Instagram account from a listener named Jeff, and he goes, "Hey man, I just listened to your show with Carter McLean. Absolutely engrossing stuff. That show is a lesson for life. That's what drumming can be." Hey, I'll take that day in, day out, every single day.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. I honestly, I thought that was one of the better interviews that I'd done also. Carter's one of those guys that he's done quite a few interviews, but we took it, again, in a different direction, and we really talked a good bit about life. I mean, of course, we talked about drumming and whatnot, but we got a little bit more on the personal side of things, and we talked a little bit about some of the things that we had in common, and it just it turned out great. So also quick shout out to Carter McLean. He's got that new book that came out a few weeks ago that that thing is burning up the drumming method book charts.
People are taking to it for sure.
Yeah, so a little quick shout out to Carter McLean, and thanks to the listeners for staying in touch. Greatly appreciated. So like we previously mentioned, John, kudos to you again, sir. You are the person that said we need to do an artist feature on Josh Freese.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, bully for you. Let's do it, man. He's another one of those guys. Who would you draw some type of a comparison with?
Man. That's a tough one. As far as really established session guys, maybe Kenny, because Kenny, yeah, you know, like he'll do some heavy stuff. He'll do, you know, but he's real well rounded, and then he'll pop up on like a Willie Nelson track or something, you know. And Josh has got that kind of thing. Like we sort of think we have him figured out, but he's just got a lot of depth in that. That might be a, you know, I can't think of anybody like the traditional session guy, because Josh has so much of that rock and roll abandon that just is such a big part of his vibe. I think Kenny might be a...
That is a tremendous comparison. And the reason I ask you is because I can't come up with any one person.
Yeah.
This guy is his own fella.
I agree with that. I was really reaching with Kenny, but that's probably the closest.
Because I could sit here and name half a dozen people that I think sound like him or vice versa that he sounds like. And as a matter of fact, when we go through our different tracks that we're going to play, that's one of the things I'm going to do. I'm going to be like, man, this guy is such a chameleon on this that he sounds exactly like this person here, and then he sounds like somebody else over here, and then he's completely and totally his own person on this. Because the way I kind of structured my picks for this show is I chose some of what I would call these are the Freeze covers where he's covering for another drummer, right? Mm-hmm. He's playing basically cover tunes. And then this is the original Freeze. And it's almost like when he does the cover stuff, he does such a great job of mimicking these other players that he's covering that he's such a chameleon. But then again, at his own time, he does sound like himself doing the fills and some of the other things that he does. And then on these tracks that I picked that are like, okay, these are his own original tracks, he still sounds like other players. You can hear the influence of other players. However, there's that Freeze kind of feel and the overall Freeze personality that shines. That's
some sound too.
Oh yeah.
He's got a sound. Yeah. For sure.
That he does. One of the things I want to talk about before we start listening to tracks is let's just do a ham-fisted 5-minute background on this guy.
Okay.
The first time that I ever heard of this guy, he and I are we're close to the same age. First time I ever heard of this guy was in a Modern Drummer magazine when I was a teenager. He was a teenager. And he was sort of being lauded by Vinny Colaiuta. Now, that's not a bad bit of company to be associated with. That here's a young guy from Southern California that is getting some recognition from one of the masters. And with that in mind, with Southern California in mind, one of the things that I think is kind of interesting, if you do look at a little bit of his background, one of his all-time goals and one of his favorite gigs he said he ever had was he was on staff at Disneyland. Which, if you know a little bit about his quirky personality, that kind of fits hand in glove. You know?
I believe it.
Well, did you know that his dad was a tuba player at Disneyland and eventually worked his way kind of up the hierarchy of management to where he was like a booking agent for the Disneyland bands?
Well, it's actually, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been Disney World, I think, because I think Josh was born in Orlando.
Okay.
So he, while climbing the ladder, it wasn't just Southern California for his dad, but I think he eventually became like kind of the music guru at Disneyland.
Yeah.
And director and overseer and what have you. And I guess Josh was in like a top 40 band at the park or something like that.
Yeah, when he was like 14.
Like, and yeah. It might have been a bunch of young kids.
It was.
Was it? Okay.
It was. It was a young teenage group.
Cool.
Sounds like some people we know around here.
Yeah.
You know?
Woo, speaking of.
Man, yeah.
You need to get out and.
Yeah.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, so, but yeah, he ended up kind of making his bones at Disneyland and then working his way up the ladder from there.
Hey, man, a steady gig at
14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At a part place that's probably not going to close next week.
No kidding. Yeah. You know, here's another little interesting thing, and this is a pure LA thing. Virtually everybody that I know, and I think it's kind of the same way with you two, all the people you know that live out there. Doesn't it seem like the majority of the music scene, as far as like where the players live, they kind of live north of town, kind of up in the valley. They live in Burbank.
Yep.
They live in Studio City. They live in Woodland Hills, Encino, you know, all those kind of places. Josh lives actually south of town. And I don't know, this could have something to do with his fondness of Disneyland and being close to it, but he lives over in Long Beach area.
Okay.
So he and Snoop Dogg are buddies.
Well, there's that, you know, that whole punk scene, lot of it's more the Orange
Surfers
County
too, man.
And
yeah.
Down there. So he was so deep into that it sort of makes sense. But I'm guessing he grew up more in that area too. So sometimes.
Well, you know that if you're making that commute down to Anaheim, where Disneyland is located, you don't want to be up in the valley.
Mm-mm.
That could, on a bad day, have 2 hours written all over it.
Shoot.
One way.
Right.
You know.
It's more than that, even.
Yeah, so he was in the Long Beach area, or, well, you know,
you
that's where he is now.
If
so.
His dad was working there, they lived somewhere south.
Probably in Orange County, I would think.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And therefore, it makes sense that he really kind of was, you know, deep into that whole punk scene, because that's kind of ground zero for that West Coast punk stuff.
Speaking of, Mr. Freeze is a full member of the Vandals. He is also, my understanding, a full member of Devo. I don't know if you'd want to call them. Maybe we'll call that new wave punk sort of thing. And then
I call it fun.
I do call it fun. man, I love me some early Devo in no particular. Doubt. Big fan of the tune Peekaboo. Remember that one?
I sure do.
Remember the video had Alan Myers was playing drums with like some keyboard mallets?
Yes.
That's good stuff. And he also has played with and or recorded with Infectious Grooves, 311, Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, like yeah. Chinese Democracy. I think he even got into some writing with them.
Yeah, he did with Axl.
Crazy.
The Offspring, mm-hmm. Evanescence, Nine Inch Nails, which he had quite a long-standing relationship with those guys. Sting, Weezer, Paramore, and then also one of my favorites, The Replacements, man.
Yes,
love
sir.
Paul Westerberg, man.
And some of his solo stuff, quite yes. a bit of it. He was on most of those records, at least for a few tracks.
Yeah.
I love Paul.
I do too, man. Yeah.
I did not know that,
yeah.
by the way.
Mm-hmm. Quick shout out to Paul Westerberg and a little bit of a Memphis connection. Check out his tune from The Replacements, Alex Chilton.
Yep. uh-huh.
Love the Alex Chilton reference. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get down to it. I'm going to go first, John. And I'm going to be completely up front and say that I'm a major fan of 311. I love the writing. The songwriting, it is... That's what I listen for. I mean, everybody kind of lumps them together in this mid-90s rap rock thing. I mean, completely and totally, you can take that and put it on a shelf. It is what it is. Check out the songwriting. That's my whole thing about 311. They're on a completely different level than these other bands. So now, on to my track. Back in the late 90s, Chad Sexton had some sort of an accident where he had broken his wrist or hand. And
he's punching a wall because he opened a drum store and realized how fruitless that may be.
But, you know, let me tell you something, though. Let me tell you one thing that was a stroke of brilliance from that guy's standpoint. Aside from selling gear, mm-hmm. he hung out his teaching shingle and he literally had people lining up around the block to take lessons from this guy at about $100 an hour.
That's true.
So... Bully for 311, Chad
Sexton.
Let's
not kid a kidder. That's why that store stayed open.
Oh, 100%.
That's why most stores stay open.
100%.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. So they called upon, 311 called upon Josh to play on a tour for them. And I found a live clip of these guys playing on a TV show back in 98. And... it's one of their hits. It's the track Down. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to listen to a minute or so of them playing Down. In all honesty, also, the audio quality of this is not very good. You can tell there's some audio glitches and some video style glitches from where I actually got this track. You'll hear some little warbles and warbles. But check out, as you listen to this, how closely he gets to the vibe of Chad Sexton and the sound also that Chad Sexton get, that kind of high-pitched, ringy snare drum sound. And then we'll talk about it a little bit more after this track is played. So this is Josh Freese playing with 311, Down. Chill, bottom of side is my ego becomes. I'm looking top with some words on my tongue. Feel like it, take a breath in my mouth. Spin up the while I scatter my spin. I dream of genius. Have you ever made out in dark hallway? This way, kiss the major day. I say, play the track, put your record collection. I show a man, congratulations. I'm dreaming of the hands of song. Know the way it was in that day. Playing with it and playing you. And smell it, we do it now. So, John, if you heard that without seeing it, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't surprise me in that, you know, first of all, Josh has got that mid-tempo modern rock thing. Like, he's almost, if I were going to produce a record, that'd probably be who I'd use. But also, you know, look at his background. Like, that Disneyland gig. A chameleon is what you had to be.
Yep.
So from a frighteningly early age, he was copying things like that. So it doesn't surprise me. You just waltz into any gig and have it pretty together as far as the approach and the sound and the vibe and all that.
If I've said it once, I've said it 100 times. For the young, enterprising drummer that's a little bit unsure, or even if you are sure of what you want to do, you do yourself a major favor if you could find a really good cover band that's made up of good musicians that care about what they're doing and that try to play that stuff authentically.
Mm-hmm.
You will be forced to learn a myriad of styles to play authentically. And that's essentially a good example of that. And also, just a quick side note about this video. If you do find this video, he's playing with just a kick and a snare, hats and a couple cymbals.
That's awesome.
That's it. Yeah. So that's my first track. That's 311's version, or 311 on a TV show playing that hit down, Josh subbing in for Chad Sexton.
Nice. Okay. Well, I'm going to, you know, I mentioned earlier the whole modern rock. He's kind of the go-to guy, in my opinion. And just has so much of that together. You know, the punk thing is, he's the beauty of that, of Josh is that he has all of that energy and abandonment, but it's like head and shoulders above, cleaner and all that. And it's fascinating. I love that. And, you know, some of the other stuff too, like, you know, just more like that mid-tempo kind of modern rock stuff, really down. But the thing that I love the most about Josh is these tracks that are kind of darker and deeper. And they're not just, you know, that kind of, mm-hmm. It's like really given some creative freedom and all that. And he comes up with these incredible parts, but just this commanding feel, and his sound lends to that kind of thing so well. And the first one I want to do is off a band that he's in called The Perfect Circle. And it's a tune called Judith, and it's got this 6/8 thing. So it's not just that, you know, we could pull up some punk tracks he does and they're fantastic and all that, but limited to some degree, this is a great example of Josh really getting down and creative. And I feel like it's a great example of what he does so well. So
let's give it a listen.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Ooh, it's perfect. Everything about the sound, the feel, the subtleties. That's hard to play, man.
It absolutely is hard to play. And you know, the other thing I thought about is one of the things that's also that he plays into the advantage of is him having that sort of aggressive punk style background. With today's modern recording technology, the subtleties of what he can do now comes through.
That's a great point.
Because if you think about it, if you look back at like the old Ramones stuff and some of that early vintage punk, part of the charm is that part of the charm of that was the crummy production aspect of some of that early stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff got swallowed up, you know. But I mean, yeah, what he played there, it's absolutely, it's perfect. And you know, I can't help, I'm going to state the obvious here, but if you did one of those things kind of where you turned your head also, you would think that it was a Tool song as well. Because, I mean, the dude from Tool is the spearhead of that group. You
right.
Know? So, I mean, it's that close to where it sounds like that.
And I think
like
as far as
well.
perfect Circle stuff, that's probably closer than some of their other stuff. So
yeah.
But, yeah. Man, it encapsulates what Josh does so well in that. You know, he can play big and open, but then just bring some really incredible, you know, muscular fills and just like I said, that feel is not easy to record and record that well. It's really he's got some magic in that vibe for sure.
Totally agree. My second pick, I got to lob out a couple of shout outs really quickly. I was thinking about this on the way over here, and I got a couple shout outs. One, this is a track that Josh played on from the band Weezer. Now you're going to say, well, what's my shout out for? Well, my shout out for is Knoxville homeboy Brian Bell from Weezer on guitar and the keyboards. I don't know if I've ever told you about that. I knew him.
Nope.
He and I are the same age, man. He went to a school up. He never went to UT, but I met him just on the music scene when I was up there.
Mm-hmm.
This guy graduated school, and the one thing I always remember about him is he's kind of a quiet, just a very kind of reserved dude, right? Kind of one of those, I like to call him the shoegaze style musicians, right? Just have his head down all the time when he's playing. But he had enough foresight, and more importantly, he had enough guts to say, you know what? When I get out of school, when I'm like 18, 19 years old, I don't want to go to music school. I'm going to just pack it up, move to Los Angeles. And that's what he did. And then I just, you know, you never heard anything else about him. Then one day, 15 years later, or even 10 years later, turn on the TV and he's playing Buddy Holly with Weezer. So shout out to Brian Bell, homeboy.
Good deal, man.
And it, but my second,
that's the time to do it.
Yeah, no kidding.
You got nothing to lose. You can always come home.
Yeah, no kidding. And then second shout out, somebody I don't know at all whatsoever, but I've got mad respect for the guitar player from Weezer, or excuse me, from Radiohead, who's this. Weezer's covering this Radiohead tune.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of that guy named Johnny Greenwood?
Yeah.
Right.
I remember how crazy cool he looked in like Creep video.
Right. Another shoegaze. He and Brian Bell are kind of cut out of the same cloth.
Okay.
Yeah. But let me tell you the one thing that Johnny Greenwood's got going on, and I'm going to go off script here for a minute. This guy has turned himself into quite the overall composer. And what I'm talking about, I'm not talking about just the tunes. I'm talking about classical composition, movie soundtrack composition, the whole nine yards. A lot of atmospheric stuff, a lot of atonal, clustery kind of things. If you haven't heard, he wrote a piece that won quite a few awards back about, I don't know, 15 to 20 years ago. It's called Popcorn Superhet Receiver. And it sounds like Mendelssohn got hit by a dump truck full of Penderecki, man. It's got all kinds of like string clusters and things like that in there. It's a great piece. And he also did the soundtrack for that Daniel Day-Lewis movie, There Will Be Blood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and if you recall, a lot of real sinister kind of atmospheric, floaty kind of sounding things happening in that movie, that's Johnny Greenwood. So check that out as well.
Crazy. I didn't know that.
I forgot what I'm doing. What am I doing now, John?
You're doing the Weezer cover.
Oh, yes. I'm doing the Weezer cover of Radiohead tune called Paranoid Android, which is one of my favorite Radiohead tunes. And I suppose also one of Rivers Cuomo's favorite tunes also.
I would hope.
Yeah.
There's a lot of energy spent on something you didn't like.
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing I was kind of laughing when I was listening to this tune, that Rivers Cuomo is straining his guts out trying to sing this tune that the singer from Radiohead, Tom York, was singing in a head voice in like a falsetto. Yeah. I was thinking, why don't you just do that, dude? But anyway, let's take a listen to this. And now that we've come all the way back around to talking about Josh Freese.
Listen, oh, there he is.
There he is. Listen to him cop the feel on this. It's absolutely perfect. Real subtle with those cross stick things. Sound. He's really copping a Machine vibe on this thing on when he's playing the cross stick. And then when we get to the rocking odd meter section, he's just hanging it out there. So let's check it out. This is Weezer's cover of Paranoid Android by Radiohead. And by the way, there's a gnarly crossfade I made in here when you're listening to this where there's a long time before it gets to the rocking section. So right. You'll hear the beginning section, then you'll hear a crossfade into the rocking section. Here we go.
One, two, three, four.
Not bad, huh?
Dude, that first section there, that's a brutal.
That little double cross stick thing is not easy to play consistently.
Yep. He nailed it.
Got a little side note on there also. That gnarly guitar solo that you were hearing there toward the end of that clip, mm-hmm. that actually is the full-time regular drummer for Weezer. That's Patrick Wilson playing that guitar.
That's even cooler.
Yeah, it's kind of my understanding that the reason that Josh got that gig was there was a period of time that Patrick Wilson wanted to play guitar on the first half of those shows. And so Josh played drums for the first half. Mm. Yeah, and then Patrick ended up playing drums the rest of the show. So that's a great little track, man. And I mean, I like a lot of the Weezer stuff. That's another one of those bands that I really liked a lot. I liked the writing that they had. And so Josh came right in and just, of course, nailed that. And if you go back and listen to any of the live stuff that he plays on the Weezer originals, he sounds great on that as well. So that's my second pick. Josh subbing in with Weezer playing the Radiohead cover, Paranoid Android.
Very good. I'm going to go way left and point out the obvious to some people, but I think there's some people that probably aren't aware of how much Josh does, just straight up session work, you know, pop stuff and all that. The number of hits he's played on is staggering, and they're not all heavy, modern rock or punk sound and stuff. So this one is, and I kind of found this out late in the game, but realized it was him on this tune. It's a Michael Bublé tune called "Haven't Met You Yet," and it's just this glorious shuffle that he sounds like this Mr. LA studio guy. He put on that hat and played it down, just kills it. So something completely different that we can check out here. A different side of Josh is playing for sure.
As soon as we finish listening to this, I'm going to tell you who I thought it was, mm-hmm. because you taught me something on this. I thought it was somebody completely different, and I'm going to give you my reason why. But first, we'll listen to it.
Broken my heart so many times, I stopped keeping track. Talk myself in, I talk myself out. I get all worked up, then I let myself down. I tried so very hard not to lose it. I came up with a million excuses. I thought of every possibility. And I know someday that it'll all turn out. You'll make me work so we can work to work it out. And I promise you, kid, that I'll get so much more than I get. I just haven't met you yet. I might have to wait, I'll never give up. I guess it's half timing and the other half's luck. Wherever you are, whenever it's right, you'll come out of nowhere and into my life. And I know that we can be so amazing. And baby, your love is gonna change me. And now I can see every possibility. Somehow I know that it'll all turn out. And you'll make me work so we can work to work it out. And I promise you, kid, I'll give so much more than I get. I just haven't met you yet. They say
all right. All's fair. You know who I thought that was playing drums?
It's probably who it is. My track record.
Who? I thought that was Matt Chamberlain.
I can see that.
And let me give you my exact reason why. Okay, first I got to go back to a track that Matt Chamberlain played on.
Right.
And then kind of draw the line to connect the two. You ever heard that Sarah Bareilles minor hit that she had called Love Song?
Yep.
Man, that groove is almost the same. The sound of the drums is almost the same, too. But that snare drum has got that kind of compression on it to where you hear it kind of splat when he hits those backbeats.
Right.
It sounds almost like the exact same producer. It could be the exact same producer. It could be the exact same studio. Sounds like the same drums. It also, of course, the feel is almost the same.
David Foster, maybe? Did he do that?
Maybe. Are you talking about the Bublé?
Yeah.
Possibly so.
I know this is Josh, and I think he played on Crazy Love too. Sorry.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you know, the other thing is this, is there's all kinds of these little subtleties that he's playing in there that also remind me of Matt Chamberlain. Like, he's playing that little snare drum shuffle thing that's got the little ghost-noted gallop kind of things that are in there. And then he's also playing on certain backbeats. He'll play like this little, like a ghost notey drag going into the backbeat with the other hand on those.
All right, let's just move on to the next track. You're making me paranoid now.
No, but now.
No.
Let me go
no.
the other way. Let me go the other way. The drum fills don't sound like Matt Chamberlain.
That's true.
They sound like Josh Freese. So it's got to be Josh Freese.
Man, they flew in those fills. We're going to both just be schooled.
That was a good catch because I legitimately did not know that was him playing on that. I thought that he played on some of those tunes,
again,
but I didn't know which one it was.
Another side, because you don't really think of Matt Chamberlain and Josh Freese in the same,
exactly,
you know, zip code,
exactly,
drumming wise. Even though they're both capable of doing probably whatever, mm-hmm. just where Matt's hung his hat and what he's established as,
yeah,
versus Josh. So it just shows you the level of competence these guys have to cover so much ground.
Yeah. My third pick is the beginning of what I'm calling my Josh Freese original picks. In other words, this is a track that he played an original groove on. And it's from one of his associations that most people are, of course, familiar with, and that is his association with Sting. He's been playing with this guy off and on for about 15 years or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sting put out a record.
Poor guy.
Yeah. No kidding. Sting put out a record a couple years ago. Was it called 59th and 8th or something like that?
That sounds right.
It's a cross street somewhere over in Manhattan. But he played on the record and shared the drum duties with Vinnie Colaiuta. Woohoo!
Who?
Right? Yeah, that's what I said. Some guy named Vinnie. And the track that I'm going to play is a track called Pretty Young Soldier. And if you don't look at the record credits, you think it's Vinny. I mean, you almost know it's Vinny because it's a 6/8 tune that's got all the offbeat bell and hi-hat accoutrement that you would associate with Vinny. But it's straight up Josh on this track. So let's give it a listen, and then we're going to talk about it a little bit more on the other side.
Young lovers, they're pledged to each other's hands. They meet by the river to talk of their marriage plans. I'm confessing, he said, I've signed for a soldier, and I'm leaving tomorrow for some foreign land. She watches the pretty young soldiers as they march themselves off to the war. Wonders if she'll ever see him again. Somehow she doubts it, but she has to be sure. So she rode into town on the very next day, undressed herself up all in man's array. With a sword and a musket, she took the king's shilling, and to fight in some foreign war, she said yes, she'd be willing. All you pretty young soldiers in those uniforms that you've never worn, the captain will come to inspect you all now. Let me down and you'll all wish you'd never been born. The captain astride of his horse's gray flanks.
So it's got some Vinnie bones to it, right?
Yep. I can tell it's not Vinny by the snare drum, though.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But definitely like that chorus stuff with the ride.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely paying a little respect.
It sometimes makes you wonder also how much input Sting had from the standpoint of like, this is kind of what I want. Because, you know, if you go back and you read through any interviews that Vinny has done, or really any of the other drummers have done, that people ask him about how the recording process with Sting goes, it seems like Sting is really hands-on.
Meticulous, I'm sure. Yeah. I could see that. And that's why he has to have someone like Vinny or Josh.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you notice on that track also, there's something I think it's kind of interesting, especially for a modern record. Did you notice it seems like there's very, very little production done on the drums aside from EQ? It's really dry.
Right.
That track is really, really dry. You don't really hear any kind of effects or anything that's been added to it. You don't hear really any panning from one side to the next. It seems like it's just kind of like, here it is. We're going to maybe add a little EQ on a few of the microphones, and then it's just as it sounds in the room.
Right.
That's kind of an interesting thing also.
You know, a record that, I'm just going off the beaten path here, but a record that has that same thing that I was always fascinated by is Lyle Lovett, Joshua Judge's Ruth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super dry, way up front, every subtlety, all that. It's an interesting way to record, and I think that it translated well on that particular record.
I think our ears are so accustomed to hearing modern records with things such as drum replacement.
Yeah.
You know, you hear, of course, everything gridded. You hear reverb, in particular, a lot of times on snare drum. You hear gated stuff. You hear all kinds of different effects that are put on drums to make them sound bigger or just make them sound different, or at least not accustomed to the way that we hear acoustic drums with our bare ears.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just become normal. And then when you hear something like this, it's kind of like, well, let's just mic the kit up and go. Maybe throw a little EQ on the overheads, a little EQ on the snare and the kick. And then, you know, we're not going to do anything else to it. It's somewhat refreshing, but also kind of one of those things that makes it really noticeable as well.
Yeah. I think it was probably a budget issue.
Probably was, man.
They couldn't afford to go back and tweak things.
That guy's never really sold any records before. Certainly doesn't make any money when he goes out on the road.
Nah.
Yeah. Carry on, John.
Oh, wow. So a record that I really, really liked when it came out, because it kind of let me breathe a little bit and still hear Chris Cornell sing. And there were songs that were in kind of normal time signatures on some of it and all that.
Yeah.
But he had his solo album, Euphoria Morning, which obviously was well received, and, you know, people really look forward to that. And Josh played on a number of songs on that record. But there was the hit was Can't Change Me. And I just really loved, again, it's not that punky, modern, rocky, edgy kind of thing. There's some swagger and groove I've listened to this song so many times, and I just never tire of Josh's drumming on this particular song. Can't Change Me by Chris Cornell.
Let's give it a listen.
Yeah, man.
Said you were gonna do this track. This is a tune that I probably hadn't heard in at least 10 years,
mm-hmm,
or so. What do you recall roughly when this album was put out?
Mid-2000s, maybe
something like that, right? And when I was listening to it to get it prepped for the show, the first thing that hit me is, okay, this tune has got this kind of a busy tom subdivided 6/8 thing, and then they throw in a bar of 3 every now and then. Mm-hmm. But you know what got me on this, man, was he plays kind of a traditional 6/8 groove through the verse. When you get to the pre-chorus, look at the space that he leaves in there. In other words, it would make sense, wouldn't it, for most people just to continue plodding through a normal 6-8 kind of groove. He kind of stops a bunch of stuff to where he's only hitting like backbeats and hats at the simultaneously without subdividing it. It's really super effective. That's the thing that caught me.
Well, I remember when I first heard it, the thing that caught me was that chorus almost is just like, oh, you go to the ride and open it up, and he goes and almost goes into a 3 versus 6 thing.
Yeah,
and you're like, whoa, what just happened?
It's where he places that backbeat. Yeah,
as opposed to
right,
but you know, naturally that's where you'd go when you're fleshing out this song.
Yeah,
but that where it goes on that chorus gives it such a cool just twist. And that's another part of what I love about him. And I want to believe he came up with that, but you never know. But
well, it's very
I love how that chorus is unpredictable.
It's definitely got a Soundgarden light sensibility. I mean, the Chris Cornell markings of course are all over it. Just as a flyer, do you know off the top of your head, did he ever actually do any road work with Cornell?
I don't know. You know, I want to say that Brad Wilk did the tour. They played here.
Savage.
They played here one time, and I remember being so bummed. I had a gig.
Was it at...
It was like downtown.
Was it at Center Stage?
You know, I think it was an outdoor thing.
Okay, well, now Soundgarden definitely played outdoors down at Underground Atlanta one time.
No, this was a Cornell solo thing because I was really into that record.
I've got a quick Chris Cornell brush with greatness that you will in particular appreciate. Do you remember for quite a few years when American Idol was in vogue, they used to do the regional American Idol shows around here? And, you know, I played in a house group with some of our friends. He used to hold it. It was most of the time at Center Stage back in the early days. When we finished the show one night, we were loading out and we were being, I'm going to use the politically correct term of helped out of the venue because the next night Chris Cornell was playing there. Well, as I was loading out, if you've ever played that venue, it's a series of these bizarre ramps that get you out to this little wonky loading dock that almost loads right out onto, is it West Peachtree?
Yeah, right there. And cars flying.
You know. I know, it's a horrible, horrible. Well, there was a truck that was already pulled in to that loading dock.
Yep.
So everybody is in a great mood, as you can imagine. Yeah. Well, as I am with one of the one of the stagehands at the Center Stage helping me load out, he's helping me go down this ramp to get out to the sidewalk there at West Peachtree. I'm going to pull my car around, and we get up there, and the guy goes, "Did you see that?" And I'm like, "No, I was not in a mood." And he goes, "Dude, Chris Cornell just walked right by you." Chris Cornell was walking up the ramp, man. They'd gotten there a day earlier for some reason.
Yeah.
And that's my brush with greatness. It's a little bit of a letdown, I'll have to admit that story was. But,
well, you know, I much would have preferred that you said, "Get the F out of my way, loser," and you guys got in a fight. Spilled out on the West Peachtree and Chris Cornell got run over by a... No. I'm kidding.
I didn't recognize the guy at all because this was the short-haired Chris Cornell.
Oh, yeah.
Wearing like a cable knit sweater kind of, "I'm not ready to rock" Chris Cornell. "I'm a day early" Chris Cornell.
He was in incognito, man.
Yeah, he was. My last track, John, I've got to be very careful with this title since we're trying to keep this a PG show.
Yeah, my boy listens sometimes.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Not always, but...
Yeah. I was made aware of this wacky solo record that Josh Freese put out at least 10 years ago. And he was one of the original crowdfunding guys. And he got real creative, if you recall, man. He was doing things like, "Hey, if you give me $1,000, I will meet you at a restaurant of your choice and have dinner with you. If you give me $10,000, I'll write a song about you and put it on the," you know, that kind of crazy stuff is what he was doing, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And so naturally, when you have that kind of buzz going on your record, you're going, somebody's going to be listening to it, right? So I started listening to his stuff. And it's very much the kind of music that you do associate with Josh that we talked about at the beginning of the show. Surf, punk, Southern California, Los Angeles to the bone stuff, right? And he has a tune on there, and this is my fourth track. It's the title is It's Effed Up, okay? But he uses the real term, right? Again, we got to keep it PG here on the show. But the thing that will catch you about it is it's this punk groove, punk feel with depraved abandon in seven. And yeah, and the other thing that's worth noting on this is Josh pretty much plays and sings everything. So it's a true solo effort. There's a handful of things. Like on this, he uses that saxophone player that plays with Galactic, Skerrick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
who plays with Matt Chamberlain.
Exactly.
Chris yeah. Buggin.
Exactly. Exactly. So.
A perfect circle.
Let's give it a listen, John. So this is from Josh's solo record since 1972. It's Effed Up. Somebody ripped my shorts. He was just like, I'm going to take the drums, tune them low, tape them up, and go.
Just owning it, man.
That's probably the most typical Josh Freese I think of.
I mean, I definitely think like anything like that, why would you call anyone else?
Yeah.
He's just got it so down, man.
I mean, even his voice, it's everything on that track. Sounds like Long Beach.
Totally. Yeah.
Voice the whole nine yards.
SoCal, baby.
I mean, it is Southern California to the bone.
No question.
There's my fourth pick.
All right. Well, I'm just going to go with a feel-good summer hit. And I never knew that Josh played with Todd Rundgren. I mean, wait, sorry. Sorry.
You dirty.
All joking aside, just this is just a, I don't even know. It's like the drumming's great, of course. It's not like I'm going to light you up if you're into fusion or whatever. But this song sounded so different when it came out than what was happening. And it was just kind of a well-written, feel-good track. And it's Josh. So I love it. And we're going to listen to it.
Side note, wasn't this the band that they had this hit and immediately disbanded? Or am I thinking of somebody else that's different?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Brand New Immortals, I think it is.
Yeah.
Radicals, sorry. Brand New Immortals is a...
That's Kenny's band.
That's a local Atlanta.
Yeah.
Brand New Radicals. I think they're a Bay Area, maybe.
You get what you give.
Yep.
Let's give it a listen.
Two, one, two,
there you have it. He can do that.
And it doesn't need any more than that.
It's great.
I mean, even the drum fills, the little like double stop, bum, 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 those things. If you did really anything any more than that, it probably wouldn't sound right.
And this is just another example of how much I respect him in that, you know, he could go completely off the rails or whatever, but at the same time, it's like, man, this is what this needs to be, and does it, you know?
You know, something that's kind of subtle.
He's a musician. He's not a drummer.
Well, obviously, from that previous track with the singing and everything else, him stacking harmonies and all that good stuff, he knows what's going on. You know, something that's really subtle on that track also is that, you know, when you play a standard groove like that, and, you know, you're just playing meat and potatoes, pop kind of stuff, and you're on this first verse, you kind of think in terms of like, you know, I'm going to just play a nice tight groove with a nice crisp hi-hat. Kind of keeps those hats a little bit open, a little bit, not fully open, just a little bit halfway open, creates that nice continuum all the way through that thing, and it just fits perfectly.
It just, it gives it some weight that wouldn't be there if they were closed.
Yeah.
Man, there's an example. That song's an example of one of many that he's done. I mean, this guy's done a ton of pop stuff. Avril Lavigne and Kelly Clarkson, like a lot of her big hits. You know, this, and do yourself a favor and dig into some other stuff like the Westerberg stuff and
Devo. I like his Devo stuff he does with Devo.
It's fantastic. There's like, you know, I know as a drummer sometimes we get, you know, really wrapped up in the odd time or the punk energy of stuff that he does, but man, he's got so much depth. It's fantastic.
He's got some kind of cool videos that he took from a GoPro or a phone or something when he was doing gigs with Nine Inch Nails. And I mean, it's focused right on him. And it's kind of cool seeing him play that stuff also.
You know, there's some great Sting stuff with that similar.
Oh, I haven't
really
seen that.
Really good audio and him. You know, it's like over his shoulder.
I need to find that.
Yeah, there's some great stuff. I think I want to say Facebook. He posts some of that stuff.
Yeah.
More really recently.
You Facebook friends with him?
I don't know.
I'm
jealous.
You know,
I worked with him once.
You did?
But I don't. I mean, I never really connected with him.
Were you playing with the Allman Brothers? You double drumming?
No, I didn't drum. I just teched. I was just a lowly tech. Provided good sounding drums for him to play.
Did it involve someone on the production side with the initials RB?
It did.
Oh boy. How did I know?
So Josh and I hit it off, you know, as drummers do typically. He was ecstatic and the thing I remember about it, he's like, all right, we're going to get some lunch, man, after he got sounds. Let's go get some lunch. And he's like running over. He rose over to said producer, like, all right, man, I'm ready. I'm like, okay, let's go. And he looked back at me, like, and I'm like, you know, he was like, come on, man. I'm like, nah, that ain't going to happen.
Did said producer want to show him how to resolve augmented sixth chords?
Testing his ear, his perfect pitch or lack thereof.
Guys, I hope you like this show. The old artist features have been a bang up hit, so we think this is one of them as well. So let us know what you feel about it. Let us know what you think about it, especially if these tunes are not the right drummers on there. I know you will, but I digress. Thanks for listening to the show. As always, we appreciate your support. If you get a minute, swing by our website. We're where you think we are, drummersweeklygroovecast.com. There you can listen to all the shows. You can check out our videos. You can interact with us on social media. And you can email us through our email form as well. If you are a listener on the Apple iTunes platform, you've heard it before, but I'm going to say it again. Do us a solid. And the next time that you are inside of iTunes, navigate your browser over to the Drummers Weekly Groovecast page. Leave us a quick 5-star review. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. It helps people find us that are looking for drumming podcasts, because it's amazing, John. I mean, as many listeners as we do have, we've got a bunch. You still occasionally run across somebody that they're just like, I had no idea. I mean, people we know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, spread the word when you get a minute. It greatly helps us out. That's going to do it for this week, buddy.
Well, I will say this. If, in fact, something's wrong with there's a different drummer in any of these tracks, save it. Unless Josh calls me and berates me, I don't really give a crap.
Hey, call us, Freeze.
Come on, man.
We'll put you on the show. Until next week.
Peace.
See you later.